这个要不要借一位？
闲着喝的，都是我老 talking in the dining hall.
Very loud.
Bad acoustics.
我刚录我的 echo 里边的，你要能听下来。
OK. 哈哈哈哈哈哈。So how do you learn?What do you learn from your talking?
I should not talk when I'm on the
job. Better don't talk.
Yeah.
Better don't talk.
Better not to talk.
Do you move observant?
Yeah.
Or what, how you are feeling?
Where?
Yes.
Yes. Attitude
Check your attitude. Mm-hmm.
You only need the one hour.
Attitude with which you're speaking.
And just things that were said before the mind started thinking about what it meant would resonate with me.
Sorry.
And do you know what I mean by resonate? I
yes.
could feel something, and then I would start thinking, what did that person say that? Instead of first thinking about what they said and then feeling it, I was feeling it and then thinking it.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Well, the other thing is, when I say, you're going to think about it, 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 you're going to think about it.
Oh.
You're going to
think about it.
So you're more aware of this,
so,
bringing your attention.
So when we're
speaking, are we feeling peaceful? Are we aversive? Are we being aware of that?
To be honest,
it was good. Noisy Peter, I'm a counter. What was it? Good.
Okay.
I look
out. The vision is good.
That's awareness, it's good.
我不要你来固定的，你得维系啊。
He says knowing what we are saying is also meaningful. Knowing that we're saying.
I think we were all talking about our practice and how.
不要的，什么的，你来写没？不要的，不要的 topic 干的。
对呀。
没输赢，啊，不要比你这个嘛，阿信，这个高的是有。
He says if we are speaking mindfully and what we're talking about is related to the Dhamma, he says we can come out feeling more energized because after the discussions here I can't sleep, I'm so energized.
He
says, if you're mindful when you're talking, mindful when you're doing everything else, then when you sit or whatever, also, you know, the momentum carries in and everything is energized.
I'm in real life. I'm fortunate enough that I have my work allows me to have one-to-one sort of interaction with people, and I practice right speech frequently.
Yes.
Just like we did today.
Yeah.
At home, my wife, who is far more diligent and
she's not here, man.
Yeah. So I have time with her. I've noticed the change over the years that
yes.
you know it's gotten better.
Yeah.
But when it comes to my 15-year-old son, it's like I'm a different. It's like I'm a different person, and B, it's a different planet. And the, you know, what I wanted to ask either was how do you? I mean, basically, what happens is that usually when I'm interacting with people, I can see subtle. Or feel subtle
yeah.
emotions coming up, and so you have time. You know, you can look at it and hear it. But with him,
yeah.
we have a good relationship. But
yes.
It's like fire and anger. And by the time it's up, I it's burnt me. So, you know, and he's the most important. So I can practice right speech with complete strangers.
Yes.
But when it comes to the one, you know,
that matters.
And it's the same with parents. It's just that, you know, it's
disaster.
เออยูกาวลีเนี่ยเออตุ๋มไม่มาตุ๋ดเสร็จแล้วอ่ะสอตุ๋มไม่มาปูรองขึ้นเลยตุ๋ดเนี่ยเราปูขึ้นนะสรุปตุ๋ดเนี่ยสรุปว่าทําไมตุ๋สิงห์นี่ตาโคตะข้าวตัวตุ๋ตาออกขอละเลยไอ้กาวลีไอ้ฉินเนาะโคเนี่ยตาลีละมันเนี่ยโคเนี่ยตาหมดสัตว์เนี่ยสัตว์เนี่ยไอ้ฉินเนาะตุ๋ดเนี่ยอะกูตุ๋ได้พอเสียชอบไปเลยละมาตุ๋ตาจ่ารอเนี่ยบลูไม่ผิดหรอกไม่ผิดอยู่เลยไม่อยากดีลูก
ไอ้ชีโซโหมาตีได้เลยเลยอกลงน่ะตัวไลฟ์สปีชอ่าถอดเลยเลยอ่ะเลยตัวรู้แน่สวยอ่ะเฉิงชื่อเลยเตวีมวยๆเลยตีได้อะแล้วเนี่ยไปพร้อมกูอเส้นเพียงเผลอลงอย่างได้ตัวตาเนี่ยสวยเนี่ยบลูผิดหรอไม่ตีอยู่แหละมีหลองดโลเว้ยแหละตัวตะลีอะไรเฉิงมาหลองก็มีแหละโหผมก็ได้แล้วโหลกูตาพูดได้ตัวเลยกูก็เสกกูได้มั้ยจิกูตะบอดอ่ะกูบลูตู้กูโหเส้นน่ะอ่ะมันยังบริทันอยู่
He says, whenever you see yourself, particularly when you say, every time, and he says, do this all the time, every time. He says, notice what you're feeling when you see him. And then when you notice your feelings, you will also begin to slowly see what expectations you have of him, what desires you have for him, you know, what your attitudes are towards him. All these things, all your
attitude, ideal,
your inner stuff relating to him, you will notice it, and then he said you will be able to change the ideas that are. He said if you didn't think of him as your son, but a human being. I said I made this human being, and he said no. He said. He didn't come because you called him. He didn't come. He came because of his karma. When his son was born. That was when he was practicing very hard in lay life. Been practicing almost 3 years, I think, by the time his son was born. He said, and they brought the baby to him. He looked at it. He said, really, he didn't think this is my son. He thought, wow, human being has come into being.
I found it almost easier to understand what was happening in my mind while we were talking than when I'm in meditation.
Yes, it's easier because it's just when we talk, we have to think before we talk. So it's so obvious.
Yeah. Because we just come from sitting. And the contrast was stark. Yeah, just an observation.
Yeah. He says when we want to say something to anybody, he says our attitude and what we want to convey to that person. He says if we have the wrong attitude, we're going to burn it. You know, burn that conversation, the bridge. Yeah. Our attitudes are in everything. He said if we didn't have our we have preconceived ideas, we've already made assumptions about that person, where that person is coming from and stuff like that.
their motivations and stuff. We've already made assumptions. He says, and instead of doing that, if we would just come with a simple sort of attitude, like, what does this person want? He says, as parents, he says it's worse because one of the common things parents have when they speak to their children is, you've got to listen to me. I asked him, how is your son? And he said, he's fine. He says, everybody, his family comes to complain about his son and say he's very naughty. And but he doesn't think he's naughty, he said, because I was much. So he can empathize with his son. He said his son played truant, didn't go to school. And he completely understands. He said, he can't cope with the studies. So he says, he asked his son, why didn't you go to school? And he said, and don't you, you know, get like help with this subject? And he says, it's a very difficult subject, and I just don't feel like, I don't want to go to school because I can't understand. And he said, the adults, instead of trying to find a way to help him to understand the topic, find someone to help him or something, they scold him. He said, what's the point? He says, working under a wise boss is always much easier. There's more freedom. If you're under an unwise boss, he says, all the, you know, subordinates, they suffer.
We have to be the wise boss. We don't have to be with anybody.
Yes, we should be. Now, somebody scolds us, and then we scold the next person. You know, we just...
The pattern
keeps the chain reaction. He says his brother is a pharmacist in America, and is telling him about the training they get to be to serve customers. So they're told, remember, they're sick, they have to part with their money, they have to buy the medication, they're feeling awful, they're not going to say anything. So they're much more accepting when customers so when you prepare yourself to accept it, it's much easier.
Yes, everything after that's a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then actually nice.
Well,
everything after that's a bonus, isn't it? If you start from the worst possible scenario.
Yeah. Nothing else is so hard. So that's why we have to expect the worst and do our best. We always do best with strangers because we have very few expectations of them, and part of it is because we already believe that we can't make them do what we want. with our family, we want them to do what we want them. Yeah.
Expectation and attachment.
So he says,
So people who hurt us the most, of course, ultimately we hurt us really at the primary level. But the people who we feel hurt us the most is always those closest to us. Mm. Closer they are, the more they can hurt us.
Mm.
Real straight, I mean, people who are more strangers and all that, very seldom can really hurt us. But we see our family all the time. But then we do the opposite. We're more careful and more aware with strangers, people who we don't meet. We meet once in a while. And then with people we meet all the time, we're not careful and we're not so aware. We don't think it's important for us to be mindful with them. Actually, it's most important at home.
Could it be that we take our family for granted and the love we don't feel all the time? We take it for granted and we don't appreciate the love that they
give us all the time. Yeah. Take for granted.
ဒီလိုက်ထားတာအဲ့ဒီမှာဘာချင်းချင်းဆိုတော့အခုရင်းယူလိုက်တာပေါ့မချင်းဘူးဆိုပြီးတော့ဆိုတော့တိတ်ဖို့ဘရန်တစ်ဆိုတော့အခုရင်းယူလိုက်တာပေါ့မချင်းဘူးဆိုပြီးတော့ဆိုတော့တိတ်ဖို့ဘရန်တစ်ဆိုတော့အခုရင်းယူလိုက်တာပေါ့မချင်းဘူးဆိုပြီးတော့ဆိုတော့တိတ်ဖို့ဘရန်တစ်ဆိုတော့အခုရင်းယူလိုက်တာပေါ့မချင်းဘူးဆိုပြီးတော့ဆိုတော့တိတ်ဖို့ဘရန်တစ်ဆိုတော့အခုရင်းယူလိုက်တာပေါ့မချင်း
You know, they do something carefully with much love for the children, and the children find it as
very complicated.
I didn't ask you this.
What?
The mother, parents do things for the children, and they say, "Oh, why are you late? I waited you for dinner."
Yeah.
So the child will say, "I didn't ask you to wait." Can I say something back very hurting?
Yeah. Mibari, they channel bro. But it's not just something. People are sick.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is when he was when he began practicing at home. He began to realize the little things that parents do for us. Began to feel gratitude for the things, you know, that how parents always keep their children in mind, and so on. And he really began to love them very much and appreciate all the little things that parents do because they feel for their parent, for their children. And he says then his parents would also, like, they feel it, they notice his, and they also appreciate the love they get in return. And he says they do more. You know, they'll sneak him little things to eat, and, you know, little things just when he says we often don't know how to make people love us. When we do everything with awareness, he says, we will begin to notice these things and learn these things. He says, everything, all of it comes together. You can't miss anything if you're really doing everything with awareness.
Well, one skillful means I've realized for myself is, especially with the people that are very close to me, we tend to have expectations and kind of know how they function.
Yeah.
and the things that happen again and again and again. Mm. That's what was the most difficult for me. I always had that idea, okay, it happens again, again and again. Yeah. Can't they learn?
Yeah.
Why does it take so long? And then I started to reflect and, well, just see what my patterns are doing and how difficult it is to actually change
it, correct.
And what arose was compassion. Mm-hmm. And that was what changed the whole thing around. So I would give my mom or whoever it was actually a break and say, well, it is really difficult. And I started to actually see the little changes that did happen because I started to see them in myself. And then I could encourage her to do the same thing. Or, well, I didn't actually have to do much. Yeah. It just happened naturally.
ตัวกุมิตาสุส่วนกูอ่ะกูมาตรุบปอมมาโลจินน่ะดิโลจินน่ะโหตรุดิโลลบพิเศษจินน่ะดิโลผิดเต็นน่ะดิโลลบเต็นน่ะดิโลเตียนนี่เนี่ยเนี่ยเมียเนี่ยไอ้หลูမျိုးเลยบาจ้องตรุไอ้หลูไม่หอดตาแล้วบาเลยไอ้หลูမျိုးเลยชื่อตาโหตูคณะๆตูเสิกๆจิเดะแหละถ้าว่าลบอย่ามีลบอย่ากูก็แล้วมั้นท่าแหละตรุดิโลลบมาเลยเออไอ้หลูลบอย่ามีลบอย่ามีเสร็จแล้วตูเบี้ยงๆเปียน
เล่นเส้นซาจิตัวอัจฉิเนี่ยไม่ရှိหรอกถ้าตูจิเนี่ยหอดะชื่อเนี่ยตูเปลี่ยนชื่อเนี่ยอย่างผิดเลยไอ้เฉยมาตูตบอบอกเลยตูมาเอลอจิเลยมาไม่เข้าอูสรตูน้าแลไปไล่ตัวอ๋อไอ้เฉยมาน้าแลไปไล่ตัวไม่รู้มีแล้วสรตูรู้แลชูซาเนี่ยแล้วสรเมียละเลยติ๊กๆๆไอ้หลูမျိုးเนี่ยสรไม่รู้ตัวดิเล่นๆผิดนี่แล้วเฉยมากูเป็ดไม่กูเนี่ยกูโนจินน่ะเว้ยดิเป็ดกูเป็ดตูเส้นซาเนี่ยกูเป็ดกูบลูก็ไม่เห็นน่
he said, that's really true. We're usually so self-absorbed. He says, we have no time to consider what it must be like for the other person. We're so self-absorbed by what we want of the other person. We don't, like you said, notice our own feelings as well. And this way, he says, when your mind is calmer, there just is more space to see other points of view. So initially we're so caught up in our own reactions, or like you said, again, and it just agitates the mind, and we believe in it, and we're so caught up in it. But once there is a bit of an ability to step away from it and ask how you could do it differently, then there's more calmness you can see. He says the nature of wisdom is always to be able to see both sides of the coin. Never just one side, always realizing there's another face to every situation. Not just their side, their view and my view, but also past, present, future.
Because the mind has its patterns, we don't actually question. We just think, oh, it's as it was all the time.
Yes.
And it was the same for me with metta. Mm. When I started to practice it myself and to get a feeling for it, I actually started to watch the people that I was around before. Yeah. And I started to see that soft part in them.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that they didn't change. It was just my
view
that changed, so that I could perceive those little things of kindness and softness that were always
ตัวเบียวเนี่ยตู้เมตตาสะอัธรเลยไอ้หลุไปแล้วตู้เมตตาสะอัธรเนี่ยเฉยมาไม่รู้เนี่ยแล้วสรุปตะชาตะชาหลุเรมาตรุก็ก้าวนี่ตูเนี่ยล่ะเลยถ้าไม่ตรุก็อกုံลงเดี๋ยวเปลี่ยนแปลงว่าเราบ่หมดเว้ยบ่ห่มบ่ผิดน่ะอีตู่ตู่วิวเปลี่ยนว่าตรุท่านมาอะยังต้องกู้ไปกับตู่นี่เปลี่ยนว่ามานูญญะหมดเนี่ยล่ะนี่ก็ย่าต้องติดอารมณ์ทั่วบ่ดังนั้นตู่ตะคู่มาทานอ่ะเปลือกจังอ่ะอิสิสิได้ตีมาอืมตู่ไอ้
Rambam, you know,
He says when we, when he was in Korea, he there was a lady who came to see him, and both the parents, the lady and her husband, they couldn't see, they were very negative about their own daughter, viewed her very negatively. And she didn't tell the teacher about this, but you know, in giving his talks and all that, she remembered one thing that he said. He said, see it as it is, to see things as they are. And she took that home with her, and she said she tested it, you know. And in Burmese, it's very interesting to is to see it straight, see it as it is. Te-te-chi is to put in something and see it. So put in your view and see it. And so it sounds quite sexy in Burmese. So she went home and she decided to stop looking at, to try to not see her daughter as she always has, like with her expectation of what she's going to do next, what she's going to do next. And she decided to just observe her to see what she was doing. And then she saw it differently. She saw things differently, realized it wasn't everything she thought. And then both the parents started to, you know, do this together, and it became a much better relationship.
Yeah. I had that one quite nice experience. I was a teacher before, mm-hmm. and one kid just had trouble at school. Or she, well, it was difficult for her to learn the stuff that was being taught, and I always tried to be helpful, but I realized that there was a lot of pressure also involved in being helpful. And then one day when she was doing something, I just turned around and said, that's difficult for you, isn't it? And that just broke the ice, and she said, yes, it is difficult for me. And from that moment on, it wasn't that kind of pressure in trying to help anymore.
So they don't feel like you pity them or something like that.
Well, it was just actually what you were saying, acknowledging as it is. I was always expecting her to
be
better.
Yeah.
And at that moment where I turned around and said, that's difficult for you.
Yeah.
And she could say, yes, it is.
And feel
the whole pressure, everything was gone.
Yeah. So somebody to understand them, to just see their point of view.
Can you see some techniques when you're dealing with people who are negative? Tell some advice for me not to deal that person.
Sorry, what?
Always the cup is half empty.
So this is understand their point of view. This is what they've always done. This is what they know how to do. They don't have the wisdom to do more than that. So this is their nature. Let them be. If they understood, they wouldn't complain. Right now, they're in pain. They are in pain.
Suffering.
People who are unhappy always complain. When they're happy, they will see the positive side.
It's our expectation that makes us suffer, because we want
them to be positive. Which means we are not accepting and we cannot understand them. We don't give them our understanding.
So
to understand someone else, he says, we have to understand ourselves. Then we can easily understand that another person has.
He says,
like in a family, if everybody was practicing the Dhamma, he said, well,
Because everybody just watches their own work.
Not
finding fault.
He said, it's not difficult. It's not easy. But every good thing in life has its price. We have to work to earn it. So it won't come just instantly. You have to work for it, work towards it. Yes?
I make my living as a psychotherapist, and one of the things that most strikes me is how naturally human minds generate an opinion about others. It just seems almost biological.
Yes. So, psychotherapy, locally. We don't know anything about this person, or we already have an opinion. Whether good or bad. But it's delusion because we don't know anything. We just make an assumption or an opinion. That's why he says, you know, every time we see something, or, you know, what is the mind thinking? Every time we experience something, what is the mind think? That's a lot of it is delusion at work.
I had a young client who, he'd been to some training thing, and they said to him, be 100% responsible for your own emotions. And
emotions?
Yes. For your reactions to other people. And it went home. That's one of the things that's really striking me, is why does something go in? He said that day. I probably heard it before, but on that day, it landed.
For you?
For me.
Yes.
And I took that on. Not that I can do it perfectly, but that commitment then happened.
Correct.
I'm puzzled by that. Why does something... Why do... It's like luck.
Conditions. ตัวบอกเลยตูสายตัวเนี่ยตูเนี่ยไอ้เดี๋ยวเราย้อนกลับแล้วเนี่ยเอาก็ตูล่ะเพราะบอกเลยเฉยๆไอ้ยุงเนี่ยตูอ่ะตูยุงอ่ะสเตรนนิ่งคอสมาตูโดนเต็มไปเลยแหละกูอ่ะกูเนี่ยเสกขันษามุมันเนี่ยกูมา 100%တောင်းရှိတယ်လို့အဲ့လိုပြောတာအဲ့ချိန်မှာသူတကယ်ဝင်သွားတူယုံသွားတယ်ဟိုအမြဲလုံးလို့ရတာပေါ့ဒါပေမဲ့အဲ့ချိန်မှာစိတ်ကဟုတ်တော့တော့ချဘလို့တောင်းကြိုးစားပြီးလုပ်ရမယ်ဆိုတာအဲ့လိုလုပ်တယ်ပြီးသူသိနေတယ်ဘာကြောင့်တစ်ချက်တစ်ချက်ကြောင့်ကိုကဝင်သွားတာလေဟိုတခြားဟာတွေကမရအောင်ဒီတစ်ချက်နဲ့မှဝင်သွားဟိုကလတ်လို့ပဲတဲ့ဟုတ်အဲ့ချိန်မှာစိတ်က
He
says many conditions must come together, yes?
Yeah.
And there's a gathering of conditions, and also possibly, he says, in the immediate present, he says conditions like being calm, paying attention, being open, because you're talking to someone, you know, who's, I don't know who you're speaking to.
A client, yeah.
Yeah, a client. Mm-hmm. So all those conditions are present, and therefore you are most receptive as well, So we are most accepting when our mood is ready. We may come across an idea or a concept many times, but when we're not in the right frame of mind then, or not receptive to it for some reason, Sihara says, like for him, he, you know, we smell things almost daily. We take it for granted. We smell them. The day he had an insight into the nature of smell, he was shocked. You spell well, every
object,
day.
Object is very simple, but understanding very deep. Because of my statement, I'm a total,
he said that day he, I mean, as usual, he's been practicing daily, and then that whole day he'd been practicing. He went home to take a shower. And he wasn't, at that point, he wasn't trying to practice, but he was calm, he was receptive, he took the soap, he smelled it, and suddenly it hit him.
Why the smell can know the nose?
No, why the nose? The strong understanding that this is a cause and effect relationship, and this is the only way it will be, the anatta nature of it hit him so hard. And you know, he wasn't speechless. He was so amazed. After his shower, he went around, said to his brothers, "Do you know you can only smell with your nose?" He went to tell his teacher about it. The teacher said, "When you understand things, don't go and tell everyone. Dad, they think you're crazy. Why is it so amazing
now?"
He says, "We all know that we can only smell with our nose. We all know that. But the level of understanding it is." Sorry. So he says, the objects that we experience are always the same, the six sense objects, always the same. He says, but when the mind is ready and it realizes something, he says, then that's when.
Sorry, Siaga, is that because the taste of the smell of the mind is so intermixed with the smell of the nose?
Smell of the mind?
Yeah. The mind puts the smell on everything because it puts the taste on everything.
Actually,
you know,
it's
hard to separate the two out.
I'm not saying well. Are you talking about the process of the insight? Or?
No, because the mind is behind all of the five senses.
Yeah.
So sometimes we don't distinguish it carefully because we don't see the nose and the mind separately, or the sense base and the.
It's only when it works naturally, you know, the wisdom, the awareness, and all, when they work naturally. So you might try to do that artificially, like separate them all, but the understanding will not arise. But when the mind is ready, it will, all this will naturally be. So in Vipassana, he said, never think, how could I observe it so an insight can arise? It will never work. He says, you know, we hear people talking about their experiences, what they understood, what they did, and all this sort of thing. He said he's tried it all when he was young. He tried everything he heard of, and he got it. He got it all. He said, but it's all false. Because the mind just imagines it. Yeah. And the mind is simple, clear, no greed, not trying to get anything. Then understanding. Yeah.
When we're talking about mind, and then he's talking about the senses, and what, like, where with the name for it is brain, or what?
In the Buddha Dharma, it says the mind arises at the heart base, the Hadeya Vattu. literally translated heart base. In Asian languages, the heart and mind is the same word very often. So whether it arises out of the heart or the brain. So there's an Abhidhamma teacher in Burma who says, maybe the heart base is in the brain as well. I mean, the Buddha never said a place. He just said heart base. He said hadaya vattu, you know, which he translates as heart base. But we feel sometimes like the mind is our heart, and sometimes the mind is our brain. Yes. So maybe it's not, it doesn't matter. So long as we know it's the mind. Because when you know, people who have brain operations of the brain, some people's personalities change because of operations of the brain. So obviously, some part of the mind functions through the brain.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, isn't it? Because we talk about separating thoughts and feelings. But in fact, if you separate...
It's all in the mind.
If they're all in the one place.
Yeah.
Not that there is...
A place, yes. Thoughts and feelings are in the mind.
But thoughts and feelings, I mean, we separate them conceptually, but in a sense, they're one thing, aren't they? So when he says that, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. They're different natures.
I mean, we have 10 hour feelings on the mind.
But people think feelings are here, thoughts are here. This is our normal.
Yeah.
We conceptualize our experience.
That's a handy way to keep them separated, isn't it?
I'm not going to keep them separated. When you get the little they must show up.
Because it's a theory that you have a thought and then you have a feeling.
Mostly we feel because of the thoughts.
Yeah.
But when we see about neutral feeling.
When we have no thoughts at all, generally we feel neutral. Mm.
Can I ask a question about subtle thoughts? Like today when I was speaking, I had some judgments, and I noticed this separation when I had that judgment. And then on reflection, I noticed that there was a subtle disappointment in myself for having the judgment. And I've been really trying to notice the subtle, like not trying, sometimes they just.
And you notice?
Or the mind notices.
Yeah.
That there might just be a flash, like a little tiny image, and then I'm feeling or pain, or that something has become gross,
yeah.
But it's like almost like you've just seen something out the corner of your eye. I guess my question is, do I just keep watching? Because often I see it afterwards, I can trace back and go, where did that thought come from, that thought? And is that okay to sort of do a little bit of tracing back in the initial
learning?
ตะคัดนี่แหละไอ้หล่นเมียนๆเลยตะติฐาเนี่ยตะคัดนี้เปลี่ยนเปลี่ยนพลิ้วอยู่ได้ดีตัวอ่ะโหด้วยจังผิดตาพี่น้องโหด้วยจังผิดตาตะคัดนี้อสบ้านมาไอ้หล่นติงงาสายอยู่บ่ไอ้หล่นเมียนเปลี่ยนชื่ออยู่ได้นะเลยนะไอ้ผิดตาอยู่เนี่ยผิดตาไปคอมพลีทได้ตามาว่าเกิดเนาะคอมพลีทได้แต่ไม่ได้ตัวจังจ้ะตีนี่ดาบ่รู้ไม่ยินเลยอะตัวตีนี่ดาตัวฟรีชิ่งเนาะ
You can definitely do that. Mm. Yes. And he wants to add something, just for everyone's benefit. He was saying, we often are pleased. We often, in fact, naturally, we feel pleased with what we experience, we feel upset with what we experience, we disappointed that we had, were judgmental, you know. He says, we forget that we were aware of all this.
Aware of what I mean?
We forget the awareness. It's because we are aware that
we should
notice
all this.
We should be happy that we were aware. Oh. Why do we not appreciate that we were aware?
Awareness is enough.
다자고는 awareness도 기술사이잖아요. Awareness도 특이사이잖아요. 근데 담보 나래는요.
That's why he wants. That's why he really wants us to know the awareness, because that's when we appreciate awareness, and it's really important to appreciate awareness.
기리다만면도 아유배고 배두아 experience배고 아유사이잖아. 기리다만면.
All defilement's attention is out there with the objects. They just look at the objects and then make judgments.
누구님이야자고가 information. 새로워. 네 바다 뛰기 뛰 왔다 다 왔다. 아니 바다 나무를 넘기는 거다. 나무를 만드는.
He says when he was young, when he was little, when he's starting to meditate, he remembers this. His Sierra said to him, "Whatever you know, just be happy you knew it." And that stayed with him. He's so lucky.
But
you know, he had so much faith in his teacher. You know, he would know something. He doesn't understand anything about the thing. Yeah, he's so happy because he knows it. But he says it's in the years that he really, you know, practiced hard that he began to truly appreciate the meaning of what his teacher taught him. Because the knowing the awareness is already there's wisdom because we have brought attention to something.
It's
real. We're knowing what it is as it is. And it's wholesome.
Understanding.
The knowing is wholesome.
Knowing, understanding,
So from a young age, he's very, you know, intimate with these terms, knowing and understanding, and to just appreciate that. Mostly when we see negativities in our own minds, we feel disappointed. We feel upset. He has yogis come and say to him, I'm not like this at home. I come to the center and I'm so angry. There's jealousy.
Many bad things.
There are many bad things in my mind. I don't want to be like this. I'm not like this. Yeah. But the meaning is they don't want to know. They don't want to know that there's negativity in the mind. You know, they want to just live in the delusion that they are fine. He said, but that's crazy. It's madness to want to live in the delusion that I'm okay and I have no defilements.
Are you sure your technique is to purify your mind?
He says, in his last retreat in Melbourne, you know, in 2008, one lady came and asked him, he said, are you sure your technique is to purify the mind? Because when she looked at her mind, all she saw was the negativities presenting themselves. Before she practiced Anapana, and of course she feels a bit of peace and all that, and she thinks that's purified her mind. And then once she turned and looked back at the mind and saw all the things that were there, then she's like, this practice is not purified my mind. And when the lady asked him this question, he said, then it became very clear in his head that yes, this practice will purify the mind because you are fulfilling the cause for wisdom to arise. You're bringing in awareness, and awareness will be the cause for wisdom to arise, which will purify the mind. So he was very sure that yes.
He
asked her, do you want to live with the delusion that your mind is okay, or you really want to know what's in the mind?
And then those little nasties appear. When you start observing those little nasties that you rather not see, just being aware, not trying to do anything with them. Just
hello, makanda se dimpolai ne alokwa shuba shuda obama manone boli.
Shuba shuda right using.
You must have the right view. This is nature. This is not my mind. Not my then it's easier to watch it to understand its nature. He says very few people realize that knowing what is bad is wisdom. Understanding, right understanding.
I think it boils down to one simple term that was in Siano's book,
yes.
Dhamma,
yes.
That mindfulness is looking in to yourself,
yes.
Because every time we're looking out at others,
yeah.
It's like holding a mirror in front of us,
yeah.
And mindfulness is looking at us.
Because
very often we don't see ourselves unless there's a mirror. Yeah. We're always looking at others.
Yeah.
So this mindfulness is looking at us and seeing our negativities.
And positivities.
And positive effect, yes. All the our own qualities.
Yes.
And then trying to be aware to change them.
To learn about them.
So gaining wisdom once we can be able to turn it around, turn the bad qualities into wholesome qualities.
We first need to recognize and understand that what is unwholesome is unwholesome. And only when we fully understand it's unwholesome, the mind will want to clean it. Only if we know it's dirty, we will clean it. Then it will be clean. We don't even know it's dirty. This is the problem. Yeah, his teacher always said, knowing that, beginning to know that you are not perfect, is getting closer. But to think, you know, that you know we are imperfect, and to think that we are okay, he says that there's something wrong. He says, say a person knows everything about himself, knows everything positive about himself, honestly, knows everything negative about himself, honestly. He said, if somebody comes and praises him, he will not easily be led. If somebody criticizes him, he will not easily be disappointed.
I know what I'm good.
In Burmese, there's a saying, to not know is so bad. If you don't know,
difficult.
Life will be difficult.
Yeah.
Translating directly is difficult.
If you know, it's easy.
If you know Burmese, it's easy.
There's a big difference between recognizing an unwholesome thought or emotion or whatever,
and realizing it's unwholesome.
Yeah, so, and the subtle, so it's, you can recognize that you have wholesome activity in your brain, you can recognize you have unwholesome, but then you have to sort of just, the next step for it to actually change is out of one's control.
It's practice. So what? Only practice can get you there. All you can do is practice. He says, we use the word knowing for everything, for understanding as well. And like you said, just recognizing this is an unwholesome mind, that's just our ordinary understanding. But then understanding that more deeply, that this nature is unwholesome. So, or, I can't say it in words. Just try and convey it to you. To truly realize, this is unwholesome, where the realization allows the mind to want to give it up, not from an aversive point of view, but just to it's ready to give it up, so it will start working towards that. That's another level of understanding, right, which will then lead you to practice.
Connect and realize. Connect and realization.
So
you have to give it up personally, that's how it's claimed.
No, it's not you, so you can't give it up personally. When you try to give it up personally, you always get in your way. Sorry, I'm answering the question. So if you're... only when there's understanding in the mind that will allow the relinquishment of the unwholesome. He says it's like us knowing that anger is not good. But why do we get angry again and again? Because that's not that deep
realization.
The realization of its destructive, of its nature, is not deep enough for us to really, for the mind to really want
to.
So the understanding, the power of the understanding and the power of the defilement, are not matched. The defilement's power is much stronger right now. Our understanding is weak. So the defilement gets its way much more often.
My brain likes conceptualization, so I apologize. But if unwholesome and wholesome, at the gross level, we know, if I take a hammer and I hit myself on the head, it hurts. It's very obvious unwholesome activity. As where it becomes much more complicated, and just tell me if you think this is it's pointless actually, but I'll continue because I've started. Unwholesome and unwholesome, if you imagine a V like this, you've got the really gross ones. As they become subtler and subtler and subtler and subtler, there comes a point towards the bottom where it's almost that unity where wholesome and unwholesome are so subtly different. Mm. That for us, me at this stage, I can't understand why it isn't wholesome. And is it that the ultimately it's that unity point where there isn't really wholesome and unwholesome. There is no difference. Where the subtlety, where it becomes almost no difference.
There's a point. But don't know the difference.
No. There's the difference between unwholesome and wholesome.
Yeah.
Gets subtler and subtler.
Because
the gross ones are, most people know that if they do, if you kill a person, most people will feel terrible.
Can you tell me an example of a subtle?
No. Like liking the taste of something.
Yeah.
Liking the taste of something.
Yeah.
Versus not really... Well, versus the unwholesome of not liking the taste of something.
That's quite gross.
Okay. Or experiencing pleasure out of seeing a sunrise.
Okay, getting subtler, maybe. I don't know. Just asking. Yeah. So yes, okay. I see that where we can't decide anymore whether that's wholesome or unwholesome.
Yeah,
okay.
It's an experience, but yes. Which gives you something, but it's not. It's not clearly.
Okay. Not clear for us. Yes. Tu abbiore.
Kudo ne
akudo ne. Abbiore. Ko chanya maro kudo akudo kwen ne. Nama bilo ko sinzai ne. Kudo akudo ya. Temwe la abbiore. Na song ne. Ayan temwe ne ni ama. Kudo ne akudo. Ha?
Kriya se. Kriya se. Ya ihan la. Ya a kong ne lu ma ma che la kriya se. Kudo le mo akudo mo kriya se.
ไอ้สิ่งนี้สิใช่มั้ยตัวอย่างอย่างก็เนี่ยอย่างอัตถิธาตุบุรีมาขึ้นน่ะขึ้นจ้ะแต่ปะปุตตุสันปุตตุสันนี่มันรู้มาขึ้นน่ะกูตัวอ๋ออันนี้ถ้าแม้ดีโยโย่หลุเนี่ยตัวตรุดีโหลสิเนี่ยอุปมาเนี่ยไหนเนี่ยฮะตีนๆมุ่งๆมาขึ้นเนี่ยเออแล้วตัวตีจินะดีหาลีมาบลูเนเนเตตะหละเลยกูจ่ายแต่แต่ดีเอากูตัวลากูตัวไอ้หลุမျိုးควဲ့ลุแค่ไม่ควဲ့เลยตะกุกุผิดเลยรู้ไว้อยู่โอเคเสร็จผิดเลยรู้ไว้อยู่โ
there's a set of minds called kriya mind, kriya citta. They're functional minds. Functional minds are not possible for us. We only have defiled minds or
wholesome minds.
Yeah. Generally, for us, we just have wholesome and unwholesome minds. We don't have functional minds. Functional minds happen to those who are enlightened. They might say they need something. So, for example, when we don't have a judgment towards something, that might be very close to a functional mind, or something like that. But anyway, that's theoretically. But he says, for us, and your example of the sun rising, and whether that's unwholesome or wholesome, he said, we don't know, just don't bother separating it. Just, this is an experience. The sun rises, I feel like this, this is the feeling, that's it.
Let's come to the sunrise again, because an ordinary person, and not a real a Buddhist practitioner, would enjoy a sunrise and a sunset.
Yeah.
But when you go to all these retreats and all the talks, they say essential pleasure.
Uh-huh.
So we're not supposed to enjoy. When I was in one of the retreats, I was sitting, was standing and enjoying my pleasure, and I was told not
to do it.
Yes, because it's sensual pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's, so that was what it is. But to me, it gives me that peace, whatever, So that's what you see.
Yes.
It's wholesome or unwholesome.
Right.
เออว่าดูดิจังแต่คันเอสบีเอสมาเนี่ยอ่ะก็ก็เสียยังก้าวเลยใช่มั้ยก็นิวทรอนเนี่ยอายุ
เออโอเคเออตู้ตู้ห่าวเนี่ยเนี่ยผิดเลยตู้อ่ะมีนาไม่ใช่ไอ้เฉยมาตู้อ่ะหาได้แบบเหมือนตัดเอ้ยหมอก็มาคันซ้าหน่อยมาคันซ้าเหรอโอเคเออตู้ตู้ห่าวเนี่ยเนี่ยผิดเลยตู้อ่ะมีนาไม่ใช่ไอ้เฉยมาตู้อ่ะคันซ้าเหรอเออตู้อ่ะแลอะไรเว้ยนี่นี่แต่เอาตู้อ่ะไล่ๆตายอ่ะเนี่ยเอ้อสคันตะคู่มาเสียตัวเดียวก็ตู้ด่าอะกูตู้กำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำกำ So he said, yes, the Buddha Dharma says that all this is sensual pleasure, but he says we can't stop it. we can't stop the mind from enjoying. Mm. And what he teaches is not to stop the mind from, you know, but to recognize this is what the mind is doing. Because for us, this practice is to recognize what is happening and observe it so that we understand it. We learn about what enjoying mind is like, what it, you know, stuff like that. Okay, so that he was talking about. He was in SBS, Taiping in Malaysia, and he had gone there and he was doing his own retreat. And so he'd gained quite a lot of momentum, and he was very much into his awareness of object and knowing mind, object and knowing mind. And he was really into this space for days, quite a lot of momentum. And then it rained one night. It rained and you know, the whole forest surrounding that place, all the trees were so green, and this monk came up the mountain to his kuti. It's like, it's so beautiful, Sierra, it's so beautiful. And Sierra came out of his kuti. He said he couldn't understand what the man was talking about. He couldn't.
How beautiful is Malaysia?
He was looking to see what was beautiful. He couldn't give himself over to that. He couldn't, because the mind was just being aware. It wasn't giving meaning and doing all the fun things our mind does. He could see it all. He could see it, but that was just it. It was just seeing. He was a bit bewildered for a while. Sorry.
So is that how we should react then?
No.
Depends on your understanding level.
Just whatever happens naturally. That's what happened for him then. Okay. But tomorrow, if he looked at the sun, he might say it was
beautiful.
Yes.
Where's that week? Then it comes. Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
I was going to say, it was good to have it raining during the sitting this afternoon.
Yeah.
Gave me something to focus on.
Can I give an example of, like, enjoying something? And then I was at the little waterfall, and the front, the little Japanese one, and I just was, it was pleasant and nice. I was watching the water and it was all lovely, and then the mind suddenly went, how I want my garden. That in my garden, I don't want the pile of leaves and all the rubbish, and that was suffering. The first it was okay, but as soon as the mind attached and then the story was...
Yeah.
Is that a difference that we can... I mean, I sort of identify that one was... It was pleasure, but it wasn't. And the other was, no, I'm suffering because I want this. I need it for this.
Yeah. Well, Oma, Ame, you do more about Oma, you know, the Yili,
Sanjo
Melo.
She was Japan who was here, Panjang is here,
Yijan.
That was an observation. Sarah said when he went to America, he went to the Metropolitan Museum of Arts, and they had a Zen area, an area with Zen stuff. And then he passed this black stone. It was black marble, very black. It was square, and they had water running over it. But so gently that you couldn't see the water flowing. You could hear the water as it fell over the sides. And as he looked at it, the only thing he could think of, because it was Zen, he said, this is an art piece showing samadhi. So. This is movement, but still. So that's how the mind is. You know, it's always in flux. It's always flowing. It's very, very quiet.
Mm. I've been practicing the last time since watching the mind, and I've been seeing more and more the
defilement.
Yes, and it can get quite
happy.
I was getting quite low because I mean, like, I never thought of myself as having jealousy, but I could see
This is
really happening. Yeah.
So I sometimes have to say, no, look back and say, look, I've got a lot of good things happening as well.
But it was not at all wrong. That it's my, that I am jealous, that is what makes you feel down. So, must see that differently.
We start to see very subtle things, like when too many flies get into the house. Too many flies. Then I started to notice that I was kind of like enjoying catching them. Like the fisherman likes to hook the fish, so that the female, you know, there's some kind of pleasure in the catching.
There's a monk in Burma.
He
was watching his mind. Mosquito came and bit him. And he was, you know, quite good at watching his mind, so he watched it, he felt
better.
He didn't feel any anger. He even said, you know, please have my blood, you know, I don't have my blood to you, you know, so you don't have any you don't get any
akusala.
Be happy, peaceful, and get into a better life.
The mosquito became fatter and fatter.
Yes, the mosquito became fatter and fatter.
Then mosquito flew, then he fly, he flew. Then he caught the spider man.
Right.
Then he realized before he is anger. Uh-huh. But sure, cannot see. Very subtle.
Yeah, that's the subtle example
that
unwholesome and unwholesome.
Yeah. He was watching. Very clearly, very carefully, he looked, but he cannot see.
And the reason he couldn't see was because he wasn't looking simply. He was doing all. He was busy giving dana and having
Not open. If you want to see what is really, don't put anything. Just open. Really, did you still have the anger or not?
I thought today that you've been talking about greed on retreat. And it seemed to me today that it might be so pervasive that I can't see it because I'm just taking it for granted in some way.
Can't see
wanting the wanting something from the retreat, the trying to get something, is so pervasive that I'm not noticing it. I just maybe just begin to.
That's why he said, you know, for long term meditators, the biggest enemy to watch out for is greed. He says there's always something that the mind has set its sight upon, that greed has set its sights upon, and is waiting. It's like, until I get that, you know.
Yeah, the look into that,
He says it's our nature. When we set out to do something, we think we must get something from it.
It seems... I think it feels like it's impossible to renounce it, as it were, the wanting, because I want it. I don't want to renounce it.
He said this is just the beginning, and all you want to do is recognize it. Yeah, so just keep.
Just recognize.
Yeah.
Earlier on, we were talking about feelings, and this man here said that one of his clients came to him and said about owning his own feelings and accepting responsibility.
100% of your emotions, yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yes.
So then what we're saying here, that when this lady said, well, she has jealousy,
yes.
And then he said, well, it's not yours.
Okay, let me...
No, yours, not personal.
Okay, so we can marry the two. Sarah will explain it. Tu pyora no? Aguna tua pyora. Uze lu hotu ni a pyora time me ko ma se se yin ko ma be
a
phit shi ne.
Dame
tua ho jealousy shi de so ra dame da nga jealousy mo. Di ne ko bulo shin pya.
Da tua ho wa concept ni ne pyora. Di sait sin yin di ko sait sin yin da di sait ye
So, very simple. What he said about jealousy is right. Any emotion that arises in the mind is not my emotion, it is an emotion that has arisen in the mind. But what he said about the 100% is also true. Any emotion that arises in the mind is 100% the responsibility of this mind. This mind has created the conditions for this emotion to arise with its views, its thoughts, its attitudes and ideas. So it's all its own greed and whatever. So it's all held in this mind. In the past, it has gone through something that has resulted in this. And that's how it, it's 100% that mind's responsibility. The reason we use the word I is because, well, when we can only deal with this mind, right? This mind is our responsibility, so to speak. And in all human relationships, the tendency of us naturally, when we get upset, we have a relationship and we're upset, we blame the other person for what we feel. At least half. We want to be
angry.
Yes.
He made me angry.
Yeah.
He made me angry.
We say these things. He hurt me. He made me angry. She, she did that, you know, and so on. So we feel that people are the situations, you know, this is so frustrating, you know, and so on. So we think it's the outside that makes us feel the things we feel. But actually, the reason why we feel the things we feel is because of our judgments, opinions, preconceived ideas,
etc.
Yeah, because of the lack of wisdom and the inability to think in the right way, we suffer the emotions that we have to suffer.
So
we see the gross level. So we see someone come and call us a fool and we get angry. So we say, this person made me angry. But we don't see the subtle thought process that goes on. You know, the identification with the self, the pride that doesn't want to be called a fool, and all that, which makes this mind angry. But that's what makes the mind angry, not that person calling you a fool. So we don't have this sort of knowledge, we don't have this sort of understanding, we don't have that understanding in our own, you know, in our own logic, so then most situations we just attribute it to everybody else or every other thing. And so we don't take responsibility for our own emotions. So the lack in this mind is the lack of understanding. That is the fault that lies within the mind, that it lacks understanding of its own processes.
Yeah.
So in fact, although we spoke about, you know, my mind is 100% responsible for my emotions, I mean, the use of I, me, my mind and myself is just a reference to this mind.
And these qualities are just part of nature.
Yes, every mind has all these qualities.
I created the conditions for it to arise.
I did not create the conditions.
The conditions were created for this particular.
Yes. You know, for the Theravada, what they call the stream enterer, right? The Sotapanna, the one who is enlightened is definitely going to be reached Nirvana. For the stream enterer, he says the defilements are not all gone.
Yeah.
The defilements are still present. Mm-hmm. But the stream enterer no longer has the wrong view of what the defilements are. They are just qualities of the mind. And because of that understanding, the defilements' power is much lessened because it doesn't have a whole the defilements can never grow to a degree that would cause a stream enterer to do something that would cause a person to go to the four, you know, to become an animal or a hell being or whatever. So the first level is not to get. You can see from the stream enterer. The first level is to have right view. Is to first have right view. Producing defilements happens in it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
In this day and age, we have a lot of and we also have the Buddhist scriptures as well.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, why is it so difficult for people to attain anything in Buddhism? Stream winning, once returning, non-returning, and arahant, or even, you know, peaceful states of mind. So just wondering what side of Mutejimiya's opinion.
Our practice is weak.
But we have so many teachings out there to teach us about
these
defilements. There's nothing wrong with
so many
teachings.
But it's the person who practices.
But shouldn't that make it easier for us?
No, it just depends on your practice. For us to... First, we have to find the suitable practice for us. Then we have to do it dedicatedly, persistently, consistently. You cannot underestimate persistence and dedication. He says because the mind arises and passes away, that persistence and dedication is absolutely necessary. But the defilement the power of the defilements, the legacy of the defilements is so strong in the mind. So arising and passing away, the legacy that keeps getting passed on mind to mind is the strong power of the defilements. And we're just trying to build that one tiny bit of awareness at a time. He says, one day, just one day, if you can maintain a whole day where when you look back on the day, the balance of wholesome mind states in that day was greater than the balance of unwholesome states,
See the difference in what you feel.
It gets depressing if nothing happens, you know, when you're practicing.
He says we will only get as much as we put in. He said in the Buddha's time, he says, the Buddha was the perfect teacher.
Perfect teacher.
And everybody who he was destined to meet had all made wishes to have fulfilled their perfections, so that when they got to the Buddha, it was like that. Okay? So they worked very hard already. They already put in all the homework. He says then, the age after the Buddha is decaying age or whatever, you know, it's getting worse and worse. There's nobody that good anymore. He says all the seniors are gone. He says only the rest of us are left. Our defilements are strong and we don't practice all the time. He says sometimes he really doesn't want to just say it like this to the yogis because it is depressing. We can get depressed thinking of it that way. Yeah. We mustn't think of it that way.
Yeah, he mentioned the disciples in the time of the Buddha, and how they just had to go to the Buddha, listen to a talk or something like that.
Yeah.
Then wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, we would have already met the Buddha and not be here now. I mean, if we had worked hard. He says when the Buddha was, when the Buddha was alive, we might have been a nest of. He says the Buddha has said he saw a nest of worms one day. He said, where at the end of my sasana they will just be become
What does sasana mean?
Sasana is the teaching of the Buddha, the
duration.
Or
we could have been that person who was listening to the Buddha, you know, pulling the branch of a tree and one was gazing at the stars. And even in the Buddha's time, right, there were people who had
fulfilled the parami already.
If they'd done it when they were young, they would have been arahants. When they're middle aged, they would have been, must returners. Because they didn't put in the energy, they weren't interested. So it's strange, yeah? Even though they had the paramis, why were they not attracted to the Dharma?
This is strange, yeah?
Sutra practice, seriously nowadays? If we're practicing persistently?
Yes. Ago, Chosabi Ato.
Isn't it the case, I've read that if someone is an arahant, or a stream enterer, that they're not going to tell anyone anymore. You're not going to know.
Catch 22.
I found what Sarah was saying very helpful with the persistence, because I've realized that for myself there are so many talks out there, and there was a time where I would listen to a lot of different things, and you listen to a talk, but you don't really hear as much as really was said there. So you just pick some things out, and then you listen to another teacher, and then it starts to get confusing. So I think that's one of the danger, because we have so many teachings out there. So I've also tried it the other way around, and we had Rains Retreat talks by Ajahn Brahm, and I would just keep listening again and again and again and again. And I would hear new things. And it will get deeper and deeper. And that's what I heard from Sayadaw, that there was a question from his teacher, for example. He would say, go and check. And he would have it at the back of his mind. And
do it
just dig, 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 dig. And then find the water eventually, instead of digging here and digging there and digging somewhere else and not getting deep.
ตัวเนี่ยไอ้ persistence ตัวตัวดีมาแล้วตัวกองลงช่ามาทําอยู่อ่ะนี่ไอ้ช่ามาทําคันนี้คอนฟิวส์ไปเลยกูอ่ะตะคู่น้าทําอยู่กองลงจ้าหลังบ่รู้เลยกูอ่ะกูใจแต่ตะคู่ๆอยู่เองแต่ว่าโหน้าตะเมียวเนี่ยตะคันซ้าบ่รู้เลยอุ้มมาดีมาวาวาวินอาจารย์บรามเนี่ยเตียรี่ไปทักๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆๆ
Yes,
familiarity. Sarah calls it familiarity. I don't know if you have a better word for it. It's not just familiarity, intimacy. You know, you get so close to that subject because you study it over and over and over again, whether it's awareness of whatever or you know, listening to a Dhamma talk and taking more and more information of it from it to apply to your practice. When you get so close to it, that's when you know everything possible about it. You become skillful. He says, anybody plays games here? Then you really know. He said, because when you play a game, you go through level one again and again and again until you're skillful enough to go to level two. By that time, you know what's coming. Right? Yeah. Because you play over and over again, you become more and more skillful. Pamyaba, cultivate this. The Buddha would expound some verse or something, and then, you know, if somebody's understood whatever, then he'd say, please cultivate this understanding, yeah? You've understood. Cultivate this understanding over and over again. You abundantly,
There's quite a respectable catalogue that's out called Does the Buddha Wear a Walkman? It's about, as far as I can see, it's about altered states of consciousness that are for sale or available in various institutions in America.
Yes.
Before we knock it completely, though, and say it's typically American, Berkeley University, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, there are various august authorities that are respected that put on these things.
Yeah.
There's one interesting course called How to Meditate Like a Zen Monk.
Yes.
You've seen that one?
Yeah.
In about a couple of weeks.
Yes.
The point I want to make is that there seems to be a very good approach, and that is to have therapy beforehand, before one goes into this sort of thing.
Right.
And knock a lot of stuff, you know, get the edges worn down a bit. Another research project was about different types of food that helped.
Mm-hmm.
Another approach was about listening to different sorts of music, Mozart, I gather. But what is the feeling about these sorts of ancillaries that are available to be used before you sort of go into retreat?
Hmm. America wa teka dore ba ya ya dua tuti tanari lokali tuti tanari ngwe lo pro dua di altered states of consciousness ra se a chini now the real go yau nai ang dulo lo pire use na sanji ba le ho alpha wave to maro le ma mi la sa hello yo re ero dua tu sinza ba bo le တခါကလေဒါရီကိုစမ်းကြည့်လဲမကောင်းဘူးလားဥမာစကားမဝင်ရင်ဒါရီကိုတုံးချပြီးတော့စိတ်ငြိမ်အောင်လို့တော့နောက်ပြီးတော့တချို့ဟာတွေကကိုမမြင်ဘူးမသိဘူးသလိုအမြင်နေရအောင်လို့တော့အမျိုးမျိုးရှိတယ်တဲ့တချို့ကသချင်းနေနဲ့လောက်တာတော့တချို့ကအစားနဲ့လောက်တာတော့တချို့ကဘာဘာညာညာနဲ့လောက်အဲ့လိုမျိုးတွေပေါ့လေ
စိတ်ညာမင်းလောက်တယ်ရအောင်နိုင်ပ
ါ Yes there are so many methods of there are many, you know, ways to bring some calm to the mind or peace to the mind. He says, but they're external tools. The power to bring peace to your mind that comes from within the mind itself is the most powerful because it's always available.
Sorry. Yeah. Isn't there though this basic stuff to get through first?
Yeah.
You know, to get all the crap that's there that we can work on.
Yeah.
Denial,
yeah.
Compulsive disorders and things like that.
Yeah.
That we can work on first and then go to
Meditation retreat. Compulsive disorder, အဲ့လိုမျိုးနည်းနည်းဟိုရှင်းပြီးတော့မှအရေးတာဝင်မကောင်းလား
ရှင်းကောင်းတော့
If it's possible why not if it helps why not
because the Buddha was good and I see the Baba and I was the
Buddha sorry
the Buddha sort of suggested going down and see the Baba going to the Baba and to descend with us
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Going to
Bhavana
is
where
actually practice
down
to
keep up seeing. I put the deal to have you on this. I don't like how.
Yeah.
I think you are too. Deep your life on that.
When all of us, when any of us speak in this room, he says the rest of us are listening. Are we listening and aware, or are we just listening? Good question.
Listening and contemplating?
Thinking about. But do you know you're doing that? Do you?
Listening.
No, whether you're listening or whether you might be contemplating what you're thinking about what you hear.
Involved in it.
Or are we just completely involved in the activity?
Don't you think about your attitude when a question is asked?
Yeah.
Don't you think about your attitude when someone asks a question or says something?
Cool.
It's a natural inclination to look at your own attitude when someone is saying it, when everyone is saying
things. So,
yeah, I'm looking at so my attitude.
Sizanu le so ra le tu wa ro mya tadi cha mi de le.
Hello. Ko pat ka ni ko chin ni ko ti bi di ma da na sa mu. Tu ni tu pa ro.
It should always be together knowing our own state of mind and our ourself.
Seems a natural thing to do.
Tu wa ro da da ba wa no tin ne lo tin ya le da bi mae.
Da le chin chi lo ya no.
Yes, when you have a habit of doing it then it's easy. Cuz it just comes naturally.
We are
so used to focusing upwards.
When
we put energy into we've done this our whole life, so it's quite a strong habit. You know, we put all our energy into the outside, and we're not used to noticing ourselves.
And you know, in that sense. And vice versa. Mienau tibi maciba. Mienau tibi ma natham.
Mienau tibi maciba. Mienau tibi ma natham. So Seattle likes to say, know that you're seeing before you look. Know that you're hearing before you listen.
Yeah, that's why we can't sleep when we go back to the room. The mind keeps on contemplating, going through, and
yeah,
looking at
the room.
Just recognize them. Not difficult. You just forget to be aware.
We can do whatever we like,
we can say whatever we like, think whatever we like. Just recognize that.
How much trying should there be, trying to be aware?
How much trying should there be?
Sometimes we are just aware.
Yes.
And it's very easy and it's just there. But there must be some inclination of the mind, there must be some effort. How much trying should there be for being aware?
Just
as much as you can.
Moment to moment. Moment to moment.
And then you'll find out how much is helpful.
Always, moment to moment. Tuning of yourself. Learn from your experience.
Yeah, you might find it too much, then you've got to learn to decrease it to
the level. Until you gain momentum. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
20, 20. Mm. Mm. Sorry, Tiara. You know, I know we talked about the depressing news that the defilements are overwhelming. can I talk about the you know, can we just switch a little bit to the good news that everybody is here practicing and that there are sort of signs of development, and just as like smoke leads to a fire, you know, we can say that the kalises are burning, but at least coming down to knowing these things is very important. And that I don't know, when I look back on my own life, like it, maybe not day by day or week by week, but you know, I certainly year by year, I see kind of like that I generally am more stable or more happy, or I'm happy to do certain things like live like as I do in a forest, or I live a shared life with a community of people, or, you know, I'm content with basically one meal a day and so forth. So these are kind of signs even that the Buddha would say were quite skillful and good things to develop. Or, I mean, maybe in other people's lives they can also reflect the benefits that they've gotten out of the practice and see that these are good things to have and that this is a kind of a signal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leading towards this Sotapanna Buddha and the Arahantship and all the rest.
He said, there is good news. The defilements,
They're at the limit of their power already. But the wholesome, the kusala, there's room for them to grow. Akusala is, you know, they've done, they're all there at their maximum, and there's nothing more, there's no space for them to grow. Yeah. So if there's any wisdom that grows that can challenge the defilement, then the defilement will have to abdicate. The wholesome always wins the unwholesome, eventually.
Just a personal comment. I've always been grateful that the stage of my life that I've been to have the good fortune, good cause and condition to be able to know of the Dharma, to know of this Buddhism, this religion and its teachings, and ever since I've learned the Dharma, or still have a lot of work to put in, but at least I've been able to be fortunate to have given the start. So every day I'm grateful for this important condition that has occurred in me.
Yeah.
And I think if we take this good feeling with us, then we can
not be nervous. Yeah, we can feel good. Yeah, to to
I think in today's terms, we can see there's a lot of strife out there. There's a lot of trouble in
other
countries, other religions, and
yes, he says, as little as we practice, that's the little bit of peace we'll get. Yeah, and as much as we practice, that's as much peace as we'll get, or wisdom. Wait, he wants to tell you something about hope. But there is hope.
So we can.
There's some way he expressed it before, and he can't quite remember what he said.
Sometimes when we hear the news and we see the news, the fighting, the people throwing stones at each other and killing each other, I think you sort of wish somehow that they too would have the good fortune to be able to receive the Dharma or
teachings.
Yes. To each his own.
We all come
with our own. Okay,
natural law that the mind gets what it gets, what it deserves. So you have to work to make the mind deserve better. So and there's momentum. When you do more and more wholesome things, he says, then the desire to continue to do more and more wholesome grows. So then it feeds itself, and more wholesome then arises in the mind. He says, as we practice, it will come out of us within ourselves. He says, when he began practicing at home, he didn't believe that, you know, the practice could take him this far. He just kept doing it, and then, you know, at some point, a spark, you know, a moment of an epiphany, and then he kept going, and
you know, it brought him. So he says, the practice will bring it to all of us. We just have to keep going.
Mm.
He says we all have the potential. And that's why we're all practicing so hard, actually.
Sorry, I'd like to share one unusual experience I had recently. With I was teaching Brahma Viharas all weekend, you see, so really like all weekend. And then I had to get on a plane back from Singapore down to Perth. And when I was getting on the plane, there was a whole group of, they looked like mercenaries, and they were coming down for a training exercise. And they all had these like green t-shirts that said Art of War on their t-shirts. I'm very serious. And they weren't young men at all. These were like in the 30s and 40s.
Crazy.
No. These were very neat, clean, tidy, very fit, strong, tall. Mm-hmm. And they were extremely professional looking people. Like, these were mercenaries or something like this. They were not usual soldiers at all. And I remember I just was looking at them and I felt so sad. I really felt extremely sad, and it was almost like my mind had separated from that, in the sense that I was looking at them and I went, I don't know why I feel so sad seeing these people. And I mean, the only way I can recognize it is just that my mind has separated away from there.
Private by PP, Soya by PP, through Tata training paper,
compassion.
No, but it's still a heavy feeling. Like you just when you see people, like I was trying to understand why my mind was like that. Just everything, how they moved, how they were walking, because they were in the airport and then they got on the same plane as I was on. So I had a long time, and I was just very. I wasn't looking around or scanning or something like that. But just this. I didn't even want to look at them or something like that. But just. But when I reflected on it, there was also compassion. I just went, what a loss! What a disaster.
But don't you think other people on the plane would have seen the irony too of seeing a Buddhist monk?
Compassion is
compassion. No, I'm saying that not.
I think that's why it's important that we are symbols.
Yeah, that symbols.
Compassion is always mixed with dosa, and so that's the heavy feeling, is the dosa bit, the bit that feels the loss, and all that is the dosa.
But I didn't have the dosa in the sense of like striking against.
So dosa is everything from very angry to very dosa is the.
A sense of sadness. There was a sense of sadness in the sense that, like, you know, here are these people who have very skillful looking people.
And don't you think other people would say, well, that you're a sense of hope?
Yeah, he says, who knows how they use other people in their life, so now they're getting used to.
But I'm just saying, what's interesting is that the mind, that my own mind had separated.
What do you mean by separated?
Looking at it, like, I'm sure other people might have admired them because they're physically fit and strong, or they weren't obviously threatening kind of people, but you were definitely not mess around with these guys. And, you know, they just said it was something so unsaid in their posture.
Yeah,
and their
through.
we interrupt Pani.
You know, my condition, you grow up watching television. Yeah. And this hero kind of, you know, the action hero guy. I don't have that mind. I don't have that mind. I just like, I see these and I just go, oh no. Anyway. I wasn't terribly sad, but somehow that I know.
Do that, I would do it. Yeah, yeah, I do that. To Ani, but after we did design, not to do it.
Yeah,
nine,
do you all know how to score for table tennis?
Level two.
In table tennis scoring, if the other person loses, you score the point. So you lose twice. If you make the point, you sort of make it twice. In the Dharma, there is no stopping because it's like riding a bike uphill. If you don't step on the pedal, you'll roll downhill. So if you don't keep stepping forward, you're just sliding backwards.
Look people, look double, look nango, look nibo. Look down, eh?
Look here. Let's get to doing it. Lotaya, you must know how to do it. Lonayama, you must be able to do it, and you must be doing it.
Just a comment on what Venerable Uttarakita said.
Yes.
Could it be that you felt sad because you assumed that they were going to do something bad? Perhaps they were going to do something good. They are going to protect something, or protect some values, or something like that.
So you made the wrong assumption.
You
assume that is true.
When I was growing up, I used to have to look after cattle. When I was a child, I used to have to look after cattle and cows. And so my father would say, if any of them are sick, you have to watch very carefully. So I had no idea what a sick cow looks like. You see? So what I learned over time was to watch a herd. And if one is moving differently from the rest, it's probably sick. You see? So then I would report this to my father. So when I was at the airport, I have the habit of watching the movements of people and how they all move. So these were not together in a group. They were all separate, maybe one or two together. And how they were moving, you see, it was their extremely professional. They were actively moving separately, but yet they were a group. They all had the same t-shirts. So how I'm watching them is how I watch animals. And how they're behaving is like stalking without obviously stalking. You see? So these are extremely high mercenaries. They were not nice people. But my feeling is like, what a sad waste. You know, these are really fine looking men, very fit, very strong, and just were going the wrong way. Why they were doing what they were doing, I don't know.
There's lots of people who would look at the beautiful bantes here and say, what a waste.
So it brings us to what Sarah just said now. He says, if we feel sad, whether the people who think the bantes are a sad lot. He says, when we feel sad, there is something out, this says something this mind is thinking about it the wrong way. Something this mind is not understanding the right way.
So,
whatever we see or hear, there is a cause and effect that will
there is an answer.
He says, whatever we hear, see, experience, in the end, the question for ourselves should be, what should I do now?
With myself.
We must come back to ourselves. The practice.
I think it might have been the same, different situation, but the same when I see news
you know, as I said earlier, people throwing stones and unrest in the other countries that's happening now. That sense of maybe compassion and one, you know, just wishing that something could be different.
Compassion or should be a competition?
So it's a different situation. Perhaps it's the same feeling.
Tu la pi ora tu hello the day they buy doing a new meal. Ella ma pi en kang ma be so le compassion or should be a Karuna, compassion. Karuna, compassion is not pity.
Yeah.
A wholesome state.
Karuna is a wholesome state. When you feel pure karuna, it feels good.
State energy, account.
The energy of the mind is good.
But in sort of sadness.
Very gentle.
The sadness has veered into the dosa because of the lack of wisdom. I think yesterday, wasn't it this group where I talked about the 37, what do they call them, the 37
there? Wisana,
the Vanchanas. They're pairs of emotions that are very similar to each other, and can be mistaken for each other.
Lust and loving kindness.
Yeah.
Very close.
So they get twisted, and compassion and anger is a very, very common one.
Contentment and laziness.
And that's indifference and upekkha, but indifference and equanimity. Sorry? Because we always think of anger, dosa, is the word dosa, not anger. We always think of dosa as anger, but dosa is not.
Karuna, but next mind is become anger.
Dosa is the not wanting something to be like this. That's aversion, you know? It's very subtle. So when you feel sad, you don't want it to be this way, that's dosa. The not accepting is the dosa. It's very subtle. It's
not like the near
enemy.
Yes, the near enemy and the far enemy.
Appreciation of suffering?
Sorry?
Karuna is the appreciation of suffering when you see suffering?
Appreciation of suffering. Karuna, I don't know what you mean by that.
Recognizing
the suffering and...
The desire to help
is always a part of compassion.
Not to dwell on the negative.
You want to bring relief, but you're not feeling sad for their state. You accept their state, and you want to help them.
It can be something very positive.
It is very positive.
Yes, positive. Very positive.
The Buddha was the great compassionate one.
We often talk about compassion fatigue amongst health professionals.
Compassion fatigue.
That's not really the right term, because...
No, it's dosa fatigue.
Because there's an aversion to all this suffering. It's overwhelming that I'm going to just go...
Compassion fatigue. So it's the dosa bit that has caused the fatigue. A Vietnamese monk came to the center, and he went on the alms round, and he saw all the poor villagers, and he felt so sad for them. He was so overcome with grief for them. He couldn't meditate. He thought he had so much compassion for them. He felt so sad for them, and he couldn't meditate anymore. In the end, he had to take a collection and go and donate the money to the villagers. And then he finally felt satisfied. And then Seattle asked the rest of the Vietnamese, he said,
Why did he have to do that? Why was he not able to meditate? Who was he trying to relieve?
Himself.
If it was pure compassion, then he would not be so agitated. He would not be so compulsively unaccepting. So there's a lot of unacceptance of their state mixed up in what he was feeling.
So,
so the mind twists and turns us. When we don't have enough wisdom, we have to be careful.
It's so subtle.
It is subtle.
Yeah, right.
At that level, we do need good wisdom to figure it out.
And the language seems to be really important, doesn't it? I spent a bit of time now just talking about clarifying the meanings of words.
Compassion and the
whole thing, there's a lot of talk of
Yeah.
the meanings of words,
meanings,
which are really
yes.
important, aren't
yes,
they?
It
just
is.
To get the right
Purport.
Sense of what we want to talk about. You know, it's not a gross thing, it's a fine
thing.
When we see our own minds, we can see those subtle differences.
The language.
Okay.